Welcome to the politicalbetting.com polling matters show. My name is Kieran Pedley. Well, as usual, we're going to be focusing on the EU referendum campaign this week, as it's less than a month until polling day. Now, the opinion polls appear to be suggesting that the Leave side is catching up. But how much do we believe that when polling has been taking place over the bank holiday weekend? Having said that, could it be that the Leave side's focus on immigration is cutting through? We're going to be discussing some of these issues and the campaign in general in the coming 20 minutes or so. I'm joined by Leah Barassi of Noise of the Crowd and Rob Vance of Penshone in Berlin to find out more. So chaps, let's start by looking at what the opinion polls have said. There's been a lot of media attention that's been placed on what's happening in the past few days. I think since we spoke last week on the show, we've had a poll from BMG, ORB and a couple from ICM. And what they appear to be showing is a sort of narrowing race. I think that there's two polls that are worth talking about. ORB's poll showed, which is conducted by The Telephone, showed a very strongly narrowing race, which I think Leo is going to talk about in a moment. But ICM also produced two simultaneous polls, one on The Telephone and one online, which produced the unusual result of having Leave ahead on The Telephone. So, I mean, Rob, I'll come to you first. I mean, what's your assessment of some of this polling that we've seen over the past few days? The media seem to be jumping on this as something significant.
Yeah, well, I think there's two things going on. One is the media narrative, where I think it might be ORB, who have done lots of polling for The Telegraph. They had a fairly consistent lead for Leave for a while, then it was a dramatic lead for Remain, and now it's a dramatic swing back to Leave. And actually, my view is probably somewhere closer to the Remain lead that they had on their methodology. It was possibly the rogue, and so we've got a reversion to the mean rather than a kind of dramatic change. And I think the real one that's of significance for me is the ICM phone one, where that is, as far as I'm aware, certainly within the last month, as you can see from the chart, that's the first phone poll with a lead for Leave. So that, for me, sounds significant, but as you said in your introduction, it's a bank holiday weekend, lots of people moving around, particularly when it comes to a phone poll, actually quite difficult to nail down a certain group of people who are going to be spending the time with family, friends, or just on holiday. It's also half term this week. You know, there's lots of reasons why getting a representative sample of the people who are actually going to turn out on June the 23rd is going to be tricky over that kind of time period.
But why should that necessarily matter? I mean, I understand the principle of saying it's going to be difficult to get a certain group of people, they're on holiday and things you've said. But on an issue like this, is there any reason to think that that necessarily skews what we're seeing in the EU referendum debate?
Well, if you ask me, the swings in this debate are likely to be not unlike swings in the general election. So C1, C2 in terms of their social grade, educated, sort of A-level plus. So essentially sort of very sort of, if you like, middling people, right? So, average degree of education, average amount of income. These are exactly the kind of people who are disproportionately likely to be travelling around on a bank holiday. They've got disposable income enough to be able to travel. They're likely to, you know, have family and friends living a bit further away than certain groups. You know, whatever, you know, there's all sorts of reasons that you could hypothesise for why certain group of people, you know, less likely, you know, more difficult to find them. The key thing is if you believe that they split differently to the population as a whole. And I think there's good reasons to think that they do.
I mean, I'll bring Leo in here. So, Leo, let's look at this ORB poll in a bit more detail, because as Rob mentions, The Telegraph last week was talking about older people and Conservatives swinging away from Brexit. And now it's got, you know, concern over immigration delivers significant poll boost to the Leave campaign. And I suppose that's what the media does when it comes to reporting opinion polls. But what do you make of it? Because I was looking at some of the detail here. You've got the gap between Remain and Leave going from 13 points to 5 in 1 week. You've also got the number of over 65s backing Remain dropping from 52 to 44. Feels a bit all over the place, but do you think there's something in it?
I think all over the place is a reasonable description. I mean, as Rob said, this is much more similar to the previous poll but one. There's been a lot of fluctuations here. I think one of the slightly difficult things with this poll, as well as the bank holiday weekend, that might partly explain this is it's a relatively small sample. It's slightly smaller than the others, and they apply quite a strict turnout filter. So actually, in terms of the people who are being reported here, it's only 447 people. Once you start getting down to talking about over 65s and looking at their view, we're talking pretty small samples. That's not to say that we shouldn't pay any attention to this, but I think particularly because it seems such a surprising result, we should be reasonably cautious.
And what do you make of this modal difference of ICM that Rob was talking about earlier? So the phone poll showing a lead for Leave.
Well, similarly, I mean, you know, this is I think the central question for polling for the referendum, and it's going to be one of the most interesting, difficult times for the industry, because as things stand, essentially there's going to be a winner called: is phone better or is online better? And unless the two come together in the next couple of weeks, that's, that feels like it's going to be something really important for the industry to have to absorb. I mean, the ICM poll putting leave ahead for a phone poll is potentially very interesting. And, you know, seeing how that's getting much closer to what we're seeing online is either really important as a start of a trend of the two coming together, or it's just a one-off, and when you're talking about this next week, it'll be forgotten.
And let's move on. I mean, there was a Sky Data poll that I saw a couple of days ago which said that like 29% or thereabouts were undecided as we go into the final month. So I suppose it is fair to say that, you know, people can conceivably change their mind on this issue in the next 4 weeks. So with that in mind, let's look at the campaign and what sort of issues people should be focusing on and what sort of demographics are important. Someone that we know well, Dr. Matt Carter, has come up with this tweet recently. I'll read it out for the listeners. And he says on Twitter, Labour voters 58 to 30 for Remain, but 13 percentage points less certain to vote than the Tories. Now, Rob, I'll bring you back in here. That, for me, raises a really interesting debate about what this campaign is about, if you're Remain or Leave. Because you can read that tweet in two different ways, can't you? You can say, actually, we need to, because the Labour vote is so strongly for Remain, then for the Remain side, it's all about getting them to the polls, and it's about Sadiq Khan and Jeremy Corbyn and all those sorts of things, and maybe about an economic message, although that's maybe a separate issue, but about a Labour-focused message. But on the other hand, you could say, well, hang on a minute, the Tory vote is more likely to show up, and even though they're split, you know, that's really where this is going to be won and lost. So it's either a turnout or it's about, you know, the sort of Tory swing. I mean, I suppose the answer to that could be that it's both. But, I mean, what's your interpretation of that?
So I think the most important thing is about how relatively important those things are as we get closer and closer to polling day. I think I would be the first, and Matt Carter would be the first, I would imagine, knowing him reasonably well, to say that as it gets closer and closer to election day, it's far more important to persuade fence-sitting Tories who are definitely going to a vote to vote for your argument if you'll Remain. Because they're going to vote. So you're taking one from the other side and you're adding one to your side. But on the other hand, if actually there is less opportunity to do that, and we see further evidence of this, which is Labour voters, if they have a strong point of view at all, which I think is debatable, because I don't think they've been particularly engaged. You saw some stuff this morning coming out, TUC, Francis O'Grady talking about workers' rights. You've seen a bit more sort of an effort to sort of engage Labour voters in this. But until now, it's been a very, very, you know, internal debate within the Tory party. That's how Labour voters are perceiving it. And so they're like, why should I bother turning out? I don't see a reason to vote. I don't see a reason to support David Cameron. Haven't I spent the last, you know, 5 years hating everything David Cameron stands for? Why would I really want to help him versus Boris Johnson? So there is some movement in that, but this makes complete sense to me in terms of if you're the Remain campaign, at some point turning out Labour voters is going to become critical. If you don't believe you can persuade any further, as it were, Leave leaners who are Tories. But at this stage, you can understand fully why the argument has been very much about Tories making up their minds rather than turning out Labour, because it's felt like, well, in due course, Labour will come on side and they'll turn out, because they always do. What's interesting is, from a sort of get out the vote in a field operations perspective, is there are lots and lots of Labour votes that potentially lean towards Remain, but it's actually quite difficult to turn them out, because a lot of them are in safe Labour constituencies where there hasn't been a huge amount of get out the vote infrastructure, given that they're relatively safe seats. So you're looking at kind of, you know, seats in the north of England where activists, where there are activists at all, have historically gone to, you know, neighbouring kind of swing seats or whatever, whereas actually turning out the vote in, you know, Ed Miliband's constituency in Doncaster for Remain is going to be relatively tricky, because they've never really had to do that before.
I want to move on to some of the other detail in the poll. Now, for people listening, I'll sort of read out some of these findings, but what I've done is I've put together a chart of the ICM phone poll. No particular reason to look at that one, but so it gives you some of the cross breaks in terms of how likely certain audiences are to vote. So I've looked at who's 10 out of 10 certain to vote. Now, this is stated by the audience, and therefore we can reasonably suggest that that's not 100% reliable, but it's worth looking at. And I've also looked at the kind of Remain versus Leave split. So for example, 68% overall say that they're certain to vote, and then with the phone poll before we reallocated Don't Knows, it was a 42 for Remain, 45 for Leave split. So quite a lot going on this chart. So let's take some of this in turn. Leo, I'll bring you in on sort of turnout first. So looking at the numbers that are 10 out of 10 certain to vote, not a lot of difference between male and female. 66% of males certain to vote, 69% of women. So, you know, very similar there. But we've got the difference in age, which is really stark and I think has been brought up before. So without reading it all out, 18 to 34s, 52% say they're certain to vote. But in contrast, 65 and overs, 78% certain to vote. So that is a huge disparity there. Likewise, on the social class debate, cohort, the ABs, 75% certain to vote versus the Ds, 63%. So again, a huge sort of disparity there. And we've talked about Conservative and Labour, but this feels like with the nature of turnout, turnout's going to be very important in this contest, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I suppose there are two ways of looking at it and two questions about where it can go. The first is, as I've said on this programme before, I continue to think that this 68% figure, that this stated turnout is going to increase. This poll was taken middle of the week or a few days ago, in fact, over the bank holiday, wasn't it? And that's, what, 3 or 4 weeks before the election. I would expect, if I'm right in my theory, that 68% figure is going to go up. So you might look at this and say, we've really just got to focus, if we won the campaigns, on the people who are already going to turn out. But I think there is still a case to be had that some of the groups that are lower turnout at the moment, I would expect to see them going up a bit, potentially a bit more than the others, because there's more space for them to increase.
Do you see turnout in the actual referendum being higher than 68%?
Not necessarily, but I think most of us will be looking at that 68% and thinking, yeah, so that means that it's going to be, what, 55 to 60. Right. So what I'm saying is, I think that's going to look like more like 78 in a couple of weeks' time. And so we'll be looking at turnout more like 65 to 70, perhaps. Okay. That might be overstated here. But anyway, the other point is to Rob's point about people who are more likely to vote and who the swings are. So we've largely been talking about turnout swings. So the question is, who are the decision swings? Who are the people that could still go either way? Interesting thing in the ORB poll is that they actually pulled out a crosstab of people who said that they might still change their mind. Very small sample, but what I got from that was, firstly, they're predominantly Tories. And secondly, there is a difference between them. The people who are currently Remain but might switch tend to be younger. The people who are Leave but might switch tend to be older. Mm. Again, I mean, that's a fairly small sample, but it does begin to suggest that groups who the opposing sides might be targeting.
I want to come on to the nature of the campaign, because obviously this is something we debated a couple of weeks ago, Rob, and I want to come back to that. But before we do, there was something that we were talking about off air, which I thought I'd bring up, which was, if you look at the online poll, the crossbreak separated out the 65 to 74s from the 75 pluses. And given the polling inquiry and given some of the debate around, you know, are we getting the right kinds of people in opinion polls, I thought that was interesting because a lot of people have said, like Martin Boone at ICM has said before, that actually when you say 65 and over, typically what we've historically meant is the 65 to 70s, because you're not really getting very many 75 and overs. Now, the reason I think this is important is if you look at the crossbreak on the online poll between those two audiences, the 75 and overs, 86% say that they're certain to vote. The 65 to 74s, 78% say they're certain to vote. So even within that older age group, almost the older you get, the more likely you are to show up. And likewise, the 75 and overs say that there's 64% of the 75 and overs said they would leave versus 56% of that slightly younger version of the over 65s, if that makes sense. Now, I know what Rob's going to say, I think, but how much does that matter? Because I think if you look at this, there has historically been this argument that you're not getting the right kind of older people. And if we're not getting enough 75 and overs in polls, and they are even more pro-leave than the younger group, surely that means that there is potential there to understate leave. I mean, what do you think?
Yes. I think if all of those things could be true, however, I feel like the 70, and this is perhaps slightly unfair, and I certainly wouldn't doubt ICM's motives in publishing this. I just think, especially when you're talking about an online methodology with an opt-in panel, the representativeness of that group of 75 plus voters is, I think, questionable. One of the most interesting things, and I think it was Martin Brune that brought this up, was when you launch an online survey, what they often find is that actually the older male UKIP, but you know, keep on going with the sort of aggregated sort of effects of the people that are more likely on all sorts of other bases to be in favour of leave, they tend to fill up quickly. It's a motivated group. It's a group of people that do online surveys when they come into their email inbox and they do them straight away, even, dare I say it, on a bank holiday weekend. My suspicion is that if you looked at this group of 75 plus on other metrics, how likely are they to own a smartphone, for instance? How likely are they to have, another kind of tech product that would make them, you know, more adept at using technology? How like, as it were, the 85 plus year olds in the electorate are this group of people? I think there's all sorts of reasons why you could start calling into question. Now, I'm sure that there are a group of, you know, that this is a reliable sample of, the group of people who are doing online surveys. I'm just not convinced. I think that the separation between what that the representativeness of that group of people and the population as a whole starts to sort of separate more quickly at that
age. But you don't even need to make that argument and look at this poll to say that there's that this could still be the case, though, couldn't it? You could still say, look, just because we know that that polling isn't very good at getting 75, 85 plus, and we know that there's lots of people in those age groups out there, and if we're happy with the conclusion that as you get older, you get more likely to want to vote leave, that would suggest that regardless of whether this is a good balanced sample, it would still suggest that there would be a problem, and in the older age group, it might still then be understating leave.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
I want to come on to the actual campaign itself. I know, Robin.
But we don't know, I think, is the key.
You and I were having a debate a couple of weeks ago on this, and I think we've got a chart that's about to come up looking at some of the important. So Ipsos Mori do their issues, their political monitor looks at the issues of the day. And I believe this is a open-ended question which looks at, you know, what are the sort of top issues facing, most top mentions of the most important issues facing the country. Immigration is top of the list with 38%, followed by the NHS on 33%. The European Union on 28%, which is obviously very...
I love the fact that's gone down.
People are sick of it.
It's gone down too, but it's hot, you know, it's usually in the single digits and in peacetime, isn't it? But we understand why that's gone up. And the economy on 23%. So those are the sort of top four issues. And obviously there's lots of others that are in there. But I think those are the most important. Now, Rob, you and I were having a debate recently about what should each campaign be focusing on. This would suggest that immigration being the number one issue, being an issue we know is salient for the Leave side, is that the Leave side are right to focus on the issue. I know that you disagreed previously, presumably you still do.
Yeah, I mean, well, I feel like I've sort of been brought on to sort of, you know, just chirp the same thing that I always say. But this is this is overall. So what would be interesting is to know whether those, I would say predominantly women living in the Transpennine corridor on average incomes who have yet to make their mind up about the referendum, what their top mentions are for the most important issues facing Britain today. My suspicion, it's a hypothesis, but my suspicion would be that immigration and immigrants wouldn't be certainly as far in front or wouldn't be in front at all for that group, which would be the reason on which you would base your strategy. Now, it might well be that this is a really good strategy, because I suspect that the 38% who say that it is a top mention for them, I suspect a lot of them are probably going to vote to leave. The struggle for me is how you go from 38% to 51%, and I think it's quite telling that, you know, that I think is a tough sell.
I mean, isn't it reminiscent of what we saw at the election, right? That there are a good chunk, somewhere between a third and 40% of the electorate, who will say that immigration is out of control, who will say that we've absolutely got to get out of the European Union at all costs, and yet the party that most stood up for those views wasn't able to win the support of, what, half of that group? And, you know, it needs to be able to break past that group to for Leave to win.
Yes, but my point, and I'll challenge you both on this, my point is not so much that, you know, the immigration is definitely going to win a 51% for Leave. We don't know that. But ultimately, we know it's the issue that is the most salient for them. We know that people think that immigration will come down if we vote to leave, whereas we also know that people think it's riskier to leave and that we'll be worse off if we leave as well. So why on earth would you try as a campaign to campaign, have all the narrative, media narrative and all the campaign on the economy when you're losing the argument? Why wouldn't you try and focus on the thing that you know motivates people, you know that people agree with you on, and try and make the last month of the campaign a referendum on immigration rather than a referendum on the economy?
Because winning campaigns isn't about persuading people that agree with you to do something. We know that the people who agree with them in terms of vote leave are the most motivated and the most likely to turn out and all the rest of it. You don't need to do very much to make them turn out. You talking about almost anything under the sun other than immigration is not going to affect the propensity of people who believe that immigration is the number one issue turning out come June the 23rd.
So you don't think it can motivate Conservative voters who seem to be a sort of an audience that's very split on this, probably do have their head and heart when it comes to, you know, the Conservative Prime Minister versus their instincts. They probably do have a sort of economic versus immigration debate. I mean, I look at that audience, older voters, the Conservative Party being very, or Conservative voters, I mean, being very split on this issue. And I can't see that everyone that's concerned about immigration, as we see on this chart, is definitely voting Leave. I think there's a head and heart thing.
I mean, in fairness, isn't that sort of what Leave is trying to do with making the other issues on this chart essentially about leaving and immigration? So healthcare is clearly about that. But to be honest, you could carry on. Schools, your kid can't get a place because there's a child of a Polish immigrant. Housing, obvious. Crime, antisocial behaviour, even going to work with some audiences. Yeah. You know, so you don't have to talk about immigration to be able to make those arguments for Leave.
I mean, I think the smart move from the Leave campaign today was putting Gisela Stewart, who is a Labour MP for Birmingham Edgbaston, I think it's Edgbaston, you know, on the radio this morning talking about immigration, you know, trying to make clear that this is not a, as it were, a right-wing or a Tory or a UKIP issue. This is a Labour issue, this is a working-class issue, this is a, you know. And I think that's quite smart in terms of trying to take it out of the kind of fulcrum of, you know, an internal debate within the Tory party. That, to me, is quite smart. Mm. I think otherwise, you know, it's just sound, you know, people just will switch off because hearing the kinds of Tories that support Leave and UKIP talking a lot about immigration, people are like, I'm not learning anything new. This is not persuading me. This is just, you know, playing to something that I'm already familiar with. What would be interesting to see is if Remain take a similar tack in terms of getting high-profile Labour figures talking about the economic message and the risks, talking about mortgage rates and house prices and that kind of thing, which until now has been very much a Tory economic or argument from someone like Osborne. And if we go back to the discussion we were having earlier about turnout, if you want to close that gap on Labour turnout, what you need is Alan Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn standing on a platform talking about house prices.
Johnson,
and
25-1. Anyway, sorry. I mean, you know, I just think there is an issue that says, there is an argument that says, fight the campaign on the terms that you're comfortable on. And I understand completely the argument that maybe immigration won't deliver 51%, but I think it's a damn sight more likely to do that than focusing on the economic argument, which you're losing. Let's carry on, though, because there are a few more things to cover. Leo, I'll bring you in on this one. There are debates of sorts coming up this week, although they're on different days. There's a Q&A session with the Prime Minister on Sky followed on Thursday, I believe, followed by a similar thing with Michael Gove on Friday. And we know that there are a series of debates. I think there's one in Wembley Arena coming up, and question time sort of scenarios and that sort of thing. It seems to come up every time we have an election or one of these situations. How important do you think these, in inverted commas, debates are? I mean, you know, my view is that, you know, we can talk about influencing the campaign itself, but you've got the Prime Minister versus a close ally, blue on blue, so to speak, sort of going up against each other, okay, granted on different time slots. I mean, that at the very least is significant, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the dynamics of the campaign itself and public opinion on Remain or Leave, I don't see it as being especially important because there aren't going to be new issues that are going to come out. There's not going to be new facts. people are going to interpret what's said through the prisms that they already have. It's not like a Westminster debate where you are actually interested in the character of the people. This is objectively something slightly different. I think clearly where it is hugely interesting and hugely important, interesting for people like us perhaps, important in a wider sense, is what it means for who's going to be the next Prime Minister. Potentially, given that the election for Tory leader that is going to be coming up in the not very distant future is going to be had amongst a relatively small electorate who are, I think it's fair to say, predominantly leavers. This is really an opportunity for Gove or whoever else is put up in similar positions to make their mark in that space.
I'll bring Rob back in here. I mean, I suppose if we were going to be unkind, Rob, we could say I'm not sure who's going to stay in on a Friday night and watch Michael Gove talk about Brexit. But Michael Gove is an important guy, isn't he? Because if we look at this next slide, we've got a Conservative Home poll. And that shows for the third, I think it's the third month in a row, or at least the third poll in a row, Michael Gove leading this kind of grassroots survey. And I suppose there's two questions here. One is, how much trust should be placed on a survey like this, which is obviously of people, members of a Conservative Home website. I think Matt Singh last week said he thought it was, you know, the most reliable information you've got.
Yeah.
But, you know, doesn't necessarily tell us everything. But also, you know, where, it is interesting the support that he's got amongst the grassroots, isn't it? And therefore, if we take it full circle to go back to the significance of the Cameron Gove sort of trade-off, there's clearly a lot of Conservatives, that important swing group, if you like, that are going to listen to him, aren't they? I mean, what's your view on this poll and sort of blue on blue at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with Matt, as one would, given he's incredibly smart. This is as good as anything out there in terms of what the Conservative Party selectorate think. I think it's interesting that...
Before, just to interject there quickly, just for people that are listening. So this poll has Michael Gove on 30%, Boris Johnson on 22%, Theresa May on 16%, Liam Fox on 11%, and then a host of people in single digits, including George Osborne on 8%. Sorry, carry on.
So, it's interesting that Boris Johnson, for instance, has gone up 8%. This would just suggest that, to Leo's point, a kind of, leaning... Conservative Party electorate, or certainly the Conservative Home electorate, feel like Johnson's, like, you know, not just dabbling his feet, he's sort of doing, you know, doing a proper job. I mean, I don't think anybody would ever doubt Fox's authenticity as a kind of flag carrier of the right of the Tory party. It's interesting that it would appear some of his supporters are moving towards Johnson. That to me is probably more interesting than just Gove being out there on 30%. Because also this is kind of meaningless. Ultimately, the Conservative Party electorate ultimately get a forced choice between two candidates.
But that choice will be influenced by who people think can win.
Fair.
So, yeah. You know, depending on whether or not actual polls are commissioned of the electorate, you've got to assume there's a fair chance they will be.
Absolutely.
Then polls like this are going to be in the minds of MPs when they're choosing the stop X candidate.
Mm. Yes.
And Theresa May looks relatively well positioned here. I mean, again, you know, it's one survey. We're not 100% sure how representative it will be of Conservative members, but she is the leading Remainer here, isn't she? She's on 16 points, twice as many as George Osborne, but again, you know, we shouldn't maybe get too much into the minutiae of this. The begrudged Remainer is probably the most likely Remainer to win, isn't it?
Yeah, where has she been in the campaign?
And it's interesting that her numbers haven't moved.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, she seems to have managed to get in that position without it costing her much.
Mm. And I think we should remember that the last time there was a Conservative leadership election, David Cameron was quite significantly behind David Davis and was certainly miles behind David Davis at this point in the sort of cycle. So, you know, there's a huge amount that can change, you know, in terms of both after the referendum, you know.
Because for me, I would be inclined to, certainly rather be Theresa May in this poll than Preeti Patel, who's on 6 points, not for the least because it's, you know, Theresa May's on 16 and Preeti Patel's on 6. But if you take this Remain versus Leave dynamic and you assume it will be one of each, maybe it will be two Leavers, who knows, then, you know, Theresa May could be that kind of Remain candidate here, or maybe it will be George Osborne still. I mean, one assumes he has that parliamentary clout, depending on when the race is. Whereas Preeti Patel is, what, fourth out of the sort of Brexiters. So it's going to be interesting there. I want to...
I mean, we haven't talked about this in terms of public opinion as well. I mean, this is the Conholme panel. And, OK, I take the point that this is probably closer to the Tory electorate than Tory voters. are to the Tory electorate. So this is probably a better measure than what Tory voters think. But it is interesting, I was just looking at the numbers earlier, that there's a huge range of how several of these people are seen. So by the public, Gove's favourability is from February this year. Comrades is minus 29, IDS minus 18, Osborne minus 24, Johnson plus 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're perhaps ignoring the obvious that there's only one of these candidates who are polled, who is liked by the public.
I was about to mention, I think this may, it may be, you're not seeing the wood from the trees, but the reality is Boris Johnson, look, if he can get on the ballot, is going to win. Is it me, Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right.
With all the usual caveats applied.
Yeah, that so, looks to be the I case. Mean, there's no evidence, and Gove has certainly historically always been associated with being an effectively Osborne's campaign manager, so there's A, no evidence that Gove particularly wants to run for the job. B, I think the challenge that this panel probably has is, again, being quite tech-savvy, because they're in an online, you know, group, blah, 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 blah. But the biggest thing for me is that actually Gove, in terms of his politics, is a slightly odd bedfellow with some of these in terms of where he sits in relation to his colleagues, even amongst the Leave campaigners within the Tory party. Mm. In fact, particularly with that group. If you read David Laws's, you know, some of the excerpts from his biography, which is about to be published, I mean, Gove is, in some ways, you know, a sort of almost sort of a liberal or a even Labour sort of leaning progressive when it comes to issues about taxation. He's proving himself in many ways to be quite a liberal kind of reformer of justice, making Theresa May look even more right-wing on those issues, which obviously is quite helpful to May in that kind of context. So I think, like, other than on the issue of whether Britain should, you know, I think he's making one of the most compelling and eloquent arguments for Leave, and this is clearly winning him lots of support. Mm. I think on the other issues, which, let's face it, whether it's in 12 weeks' time or, you know, 3 years' time, other issues, I think, are probably going to be more important. And
it seems that he's setting himself up very nicely for a big job in someone else's cabinet.
It feels like his endorsement is going to be really important in the campaign whenever it comes.
To be the next Chancellor.
And to Leo's point, I mean, there's a reason why he was completely buried in last year's general election campaign, which is because, again, going back to that kind of swing voter audience, of whom lots and lots and lots are actually, as it happens, you know, teachers and local government professionals and all the rest of it, they absolutely despise him. Mm.
Let's finish on something a bit more light-hearted. YouGov came out with a poll earlier on this week, I believe it was, or it might have been over the weekend, which looked at what the public thought, that certain celebrities would think about the EU referendum. So we've got this chart up on screen for those watching. For those listening, I'll sort of walk people through it. So it's a series of celebrities, whether they'd back Remain, whether they'd back Leave, and there's like a net score that's created, basically subtracting Leave from Remain. So let's say, for argument's sake, the most pro-Remain candidate, Geraldine Granger, the vicar of Dibley, she has a net score of plus 21. We don't have the specific figures there, but, you know, she's the most pro-Remain. So let's go through some of these and look at, you know, who the Remain backers are. So we've got Geraldine Granger, as I've mentioned. We've got Mary Poppins, Bridget Jones. We've got Fireman Sam and Postman Pat. So, Postman Pat, a very important guy there. James Bond, narrowly. I missed out Sir Humphrey Appleby, who's probably the most cynical one of the lot in terms of the Remain side, so that's quite interesting. I wonder how many people know who that is, actually, in some of these polls. And then on the Leave side, we've got the most pro-Leave sort of celebrity being Jim Royle from the Royal Family with a net score of minus 38. Basil Fawlty, that sort of feels about right, I think, to be honest, minus 36, I think that is. And we've got Nan, which is Catherine Tate's character, and then a series of others, including Del Boy, Pat Butcher, Tracy Barlow, Cruella De Vil, etc. So, you see, I mean, this stuff is a bit of fun and to give YouGov some PR, isn't it, Leo? But I mean, yeah, what do you take away from this?
I genuinely think there's a lot of interesting stuff here. So, first of all, cut away that lots of people don't know who lots of these characters are. Lots of people are projecting their own views. So I think if they don't really know the characters and they think they like them, so on, so on. Mm. I think once you've taken all that out, there's some interesting things. So the Remain side are largely quite soft, sympathetic characters. So people are largely putting Remain, saying that people like the Vicar of Dibley, Mary Poppins, Bridget Jones. So Humphrey Appleby is an outlier there. He's different. He is the smug establishment, telling you what's best for you. Mary Poppins perhaps is a bit telling you what's best for you. But anyway, Remain comes out, I think, comes out of that quite well. Leave, it's a bit split. Some of them are quite angry, quite bitter characters. So Basil Fawlty,
Jim Royal.
Yeah, Jim Royal. To an extent, Captain Mandarin, though he's a bit different. There's also a couple of sort of no-nonsense, working-class, they're like us characters in Leave as well. So Pat Butcher, Tracy Barlow.
Del Boy.
Yeah, okay. So I think, you know, it's actually telling us quite a lot about the character of the campaigns.
Alan Partridge as well. Del Boy, I thought, was surprising, I've got to say. I mean, I'm a big Going Fools and Horses fan. I was kind of surprised that he was seen as so Brexit, but then I guess that's a class thing, I don't know, or it's a strange
one. People project stereotypes into these things, right?
Mm. I mean, Rob, what do you make of it? I mean, you know, Leah's given a good summary there. I mean, one thing that stood out for me is that there's quite a lot of women in the pro-Remain side there, actually. If you look down the list, I don't know if that's I think the most pro-Brexit woman other than Nan from Catherine Tate is, who's basically a bit racist, is Tracy Barlow, who's a murderer, and Pat Butcher, who I don't believe is a murderer. But what do you make of questions like this? I mean.
No, so I agree. I think they can reveal something interesting. I mean, for me, one of the most interesting things is Bob the Builder actually being right in the middle. I hate being really, really boring, but Bob the Builder is a classic C2 swing. So for me, you know, that sums it all up, really.
I quite like David Brent because you can see him saying different things to different people, can't you?
And David Brent is a classic C1 swing. Because these are people who, aren't that engaged in politics, I think, fundamentally, right? It's actually very easy to imagine a well-meaning kind of one-nation Anglican woman, being very much for Remain, you know, and it's very, and sort of paired with the civil servant, you know, this little archetypal establishment view. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got, you know, Basil Fawlty, who is a small business owner in the Southwest.
Makes complete sense
that he would be for. But you know, they're pure stereotypes. But whereas for me, genuinely, the interest is in the middle, and those people who are less engaged in politics, where their politics and their preferences are less obvious, and where the direct impact of the EU on their lives is much, much less tangible. Yeah, that for me is the interesting thing, and therefore people are projecting something valuable and meaningful. What amazes me always in these things, and I see it in my own work, is actually the familiarity with these figures. I mean, I struggled a little bit in the list without some of the pieces in brackets. People generally don't have the same, you know, it's very easy for a media narrative to be spun out of this, and Leo started this off with a large number of don't knows, but it's really striking, you know. Mm. People have no idea who some of these
people are. I mean, maybe sometimes, you know, when we're measuring public opinion, it's better to get them to project onto something else rather than to ask them outright.
Maybe. Yeah, and I think I can't remember who it was who was writing about this today, but they're talking about Zogby in the States, who uses a question from The Wizard of Oz, and that's absolutely, you know, the thing. And when we talk about leadership, we often use kind of projective techniques when we're doing qualitative work. We ask people to imagine, you know, whether these people are warm or cold or how distant they feel from them. And people sometimes find those questions much easier to answer and have less kind of ingrained, kind of conditioned responses to them than, you know, the sort of, you know, outright question of, like, who are you going to vote for?
The classic one of those, of course, is who do you think is going to win? And people looked back at the general election and sort of said, oh, we should have been using that one because that actually gave us the right answer. You know, still the polls are saying that people think by actually really quite a large margin that Remain's going to win. Maybe you can make an argument with this, that actually the outers here are the fantasists and the inners are slightly more the down-to-earth ones.
Well, I think maybe a focus group with Bob the Builder, Ali G, David Brent and Mr Bean, and you'll get your swing voters. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. I could talk about this chart all day, and you know, maybe we will afterwards. But Rob and Leo, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That's all we've got. That's all we've got time for this week's edition of the Political Betting Polling Matters show. Join us next week when we're looking at events across the pond and seeing what the state of the campaign is there and who the runners and riders are for the VP picks.